It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Time for a post-debate political breakfast. We're joined again by Brian Robinson, former Deputy Chief of Staff to Republican Governor Nathan Deal, and Theron Johnson, a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director for President Obama's 2012 campaign. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thanks, Dennis.
Good morning.
General consensus is Secretary Clinton did pretty well, at least stopped perhaps the Donald Trump momentum that had been eroding her lead. But any effect in Georgia? Brian, I'll start with you.
You know, before the debate, Donald Trump had opened up a fairly healthy lead here in Georgia. And you're seeing a very normal progression in Georgia polling. In the summer, you'll see polls showing a tight race because there are a lot of Democrats in Georgia, or people who would lean Democrat who aren't likely voters. So some of those are in the mix. As we get closer and you start narrowing in more on the likely voters, the Republican always begins to pull ahead. We saw the same pattern in 2014, and that's what's happening here in the presidential election.
But as in other states, Republican leaders are of many minds about this. Some are very enthusiastic about the candidate and will work for him. Others are not. And that's what makes this year different in Georgia, right?
Well, you got David Perdue out there, yeah, who's a fairly prominent figure in the state as a U.S. senator, really leading the charge for his campaign in this state. Governor Deal is doing fundraisers for Donald Trump. He's not actively talking about it, but that's just not really his style. The infrastructure is in place. The Georgia party itself is falling in line fairly cohesively behind Donald Trump. I think what we're looking at is a fairly traditional outcome in Georgia with a 6-point spread for Donald Trump on Election Day in Georgia.
I had the opportunity Tuesday afternoon to spend some time with a very high-ranking Republican in this state. I will not mention his name. And it wasn't Governor Deal, and it was not David Perdue. And what he said to me, I think, crystallized what Republicans are thinking right now. This was a gentleman who said that Donald Trump missed many opportunities to really make his case of why he should be president of the United States. He also said that the Donald Trump that we've seen throughout the primary, who basically insulted all of his candidates, was not really on his game. And what this high-ranking Republican and others told me is that they're conflicted, because while they don't support the policies and the values of the Democratic Party and who now represents them in Hillary Clinton, they cannot find themselves to find any reason why they should vote for someone like Donald Trump, who is unfit and unqualified to be president. So while we saw, as Brian said, the polls really starting to widen in Georgia for Donald Trump because he did have a couple good weeks, that debate performance that we saw on Monday night, I think, made a lot of these disaffected Republicans, particularly college-educated women who live in the suburban and rural areas in this state, it's going to be very difficult for them to really enthusiastically go to the polls and vote for Donald Trump.
Does it change the Democratic strategy, though, Theron? And this is something that Mayor Reed has been harping on.
Right.
We saw Tim Kaine come to Atlanta prior to the debate, and he did what Democratic candidates have done for years now: come in, do the fundraiser, use the state as an ATM, and leave. No real rallies to try to excite the base. Mayor Reed, after the debate, is saying, hey, guys, Georgia is still winnable. Is it?
Dennis, I was in the Obama headquarters in 2012. We have quadrupled the amount of staff that is on the ground that we had in 2012. Yes, we are raising money here, but listen, they have high-level officials here. Hillary Clinton, it was announced 2 weeks ago, 3 people from her headquarters are now in Georgia organizing. But what the mayor is really trying to say is this. We have the demographics. I mean, if you look at DeKalb County, if you look at Fulton County, if we just go out and register a third of the people who are not registered, we know that they'll turn out in their vote. But the other thing that I think is so unique is stay tuned. President Clinton will be here in October. You're right, Tim Kaine was here. I don't know if we'll see Hillary Clinton again, but I think you'll see some high-level surrogates coming in here, and we'll definitely have some more grassroots events.
I think it's a lot of hocus-pocus to assume that people who won't bother to go register are then going to turn around and bother to actually go to the elementary school or church in their neighborhood to vote and stand in line on Election Day. Democrats have promised that for years, and it hasn't happened.
But the one thing I think you can agree with, Brian, is, and I know that you don't necessarily believe in the grassroots strategy that we nationally have been able to implement. And you're right, we haven't done a good job in the last couple decades in Georgia doing it. But I'm telling you, the challenge is, and I know we'll get into this later, is that if we continue to make the process harder for these folks to register, then of course it plays into the Republican strategy of not letting these folks actually be able to register and give them the proper ID they need to do so. But you're right. Listen, if Democrats cannot get excited about this election, every year, Brian's going to say this, every year we say, oh, this is the most important election of our lifetime.
Yes,
oh, this is the most important, you know, Democrats. But let me tell you, if Donald Trump is not only able to win Georgia, but win the presidency, I don't know how you can't be fired up if you're a Democrat. Love or hate Hillary Clinton, she's not perfect. You introduced me to someone perfect. And matter of fact, I tell you, you can never introduce me to someone who's a perfect candidate. But she's much better on than Donald Trump on the issues. And so I think Georgia Democrats are going to be motivated. I agree with Brian. We got to register them. We got to turn them out. But I think, to Mayor Reed's point, the campaign has got to send more resources down here.
Yeah, I want to go back to Theron's original theory about what the debate might mean for Georgia and in polling and in the momentum for Donald Trump. I think there's a lot of truth in what Theron is saying. I think we will know the importance of the debate. You know, this weekend we begin to see where the polls are now. We know going into Monday night's debate that Donald Trump was moving fast. His numbers were climbing at a rapid pace, really in almost unusually fast, and closing that gap that has been in those swing states, some of them double digits, now down to 1 or 2 points. I mean, virtual dead heat. So if that momentum continues in any capacity whatsoever, we know that the debate is irrelevant. Even in a dead heat race in the past, a great debate performance and a really bad debate performance by the two candidates hasn't shifted the polls too dramatically. It's usually at most a 3-4 point swing after a debate. So I don't think that we know yet how important the debate was. I mean, I agree with Theron that Hillary won on the merits, certainly seemed more knowledgeable about policy and was able to speak in more depth and didn't let him get under her skin, which I think was the bar for her, I think, Monday night. I mean, people expected her to be better on policy. It was how she responded on that stage, mano a mano, you might say, with someone who is a insult master.
It was very clear that one candidate for president was extremely prepared to have a open and honest conversation with the American people, and the other GOP candidate was extremely not prepared. I think what paid off for Hillary Clinton was taking some time off those 2-3 days. She was masterful. I mean, at times when Donald Trump tried to attack her about resting and her stamina, I thought her answer about being prepared was priceless. But if Donald Trump is depending on white people to vote him in as president, then he will lose, because he did nothing in that debate to appeal to minority groups that are going to come out in very large numbers. When he had an opportunity to talk about race relations in this country, and the moderator asked him specifically, what is your plan? What do you suggest to deal with race relations in this country, particularly around the issues that we're seeing in Tulsa and in Charlotte and other places where we have this tremendous amount of dissension between officers and citizens who are being shot, some of whom are unarmed and armed? His answer was, I do nothing. When he had an opportunity to not continue to insult the Latino community, he goes out and doubled down. When he had an opportunity to bring in the Latino community and not continue to insult them, he doubled down on his criticism of Miss Universe, basically saying that she was Miss Piggy. There's no way that this strategy of trying to appeal to white Republicans and maybe some white Democrats who don't like Hillary Clinton, that's a flawed strategy if he wants to become president of the United States.
Brian, in the middle of all this, we had the resignation of the Trump campaign's executive director here in Georgia, Brandon Phillips, after Channel 2, in an investigative story, unearthed a record that he had of a guilty plea to a criminal trespass charge. Does this really disrupt the campaign's momentum in Georgia, though?
No, and I'm glad we brought this up. One, Billy Kirkland, my good friend, was really
taking over the campaign now.
Billy really already was running the Georgia operation. Brandon had been there from the primary, and so he kept that title. But Billy Kirkland, who did Senator Perdue's campaign in 2014 as campaign manager, is and has been running the show. So there's going to be some continuity there in the Georgia effort. I don't think it'll be disrupted. That said, I don't think this should have happened to Brandon. Brandon is a friend of mine. We're not close, but I know him. He's a decent dude, you know, and I don't think that an arrest 8 years ago However serious the charges may have been, and I think, you know, we have to say they were, there's got to be an opportunity for a young person, and he's still a very young person, to say, I'm sorry for what I've done in the past. I'm dedicated to being a good citizen and working hard and making a difference in my home state. That's what he's trying to do. And I think if somebody in his situation, if it ever happens again, yeah, all bets are off. I mean, cut ties. We aren't there. I think he deserves another chance, and I hope somebody in politics in Georgia gives him that chance.
Yeah, I don't know, Brandon, but I agree with Brian. Listen, you know, no one in this political game of getting people elected, and even some of our candidates, they all have a past. And I think that this is another situation where a young man's past continued to haunt him. What I think was really so much striking is not so much of what Brandon didn't do or did do. I mean, let's give a guy credit. I mean, he's been running a pretty good campaign in Georgia for Donald Trump. But again, this is another opportunity for Donald Trump to really come forward himself and defend someone who was heavily involved in his campaign and say exactly what Brian just said. But this is the same Donald Trump who allowed a surrogate African-American male pastor from South Carolina who traveled around the country with him, who made speeches, and then when it was some stuff brought up in his past and how he falsified his bio, Donald Trump in his campaign then did not say anything. I know that he released a statement, but again, once his campaign is over, Brandon's future is ahead of him. And so I'm so happy that Brian actually said that, because it's very rare in politics that someone comes to your defense and defends you when something bad happens to you.
Is it an image thing, though, given the nature of this charge? In other words, had it been marijuana possession, that it would be different from a criminal trespass charge, which at least indicates some kind of behavior to someone else as opposed to something you just did on your own, that the campaign might have been worried about image there.
I think it was a rash decision. I think it was long enough ago in the past that it should be water under the bridge at this point in time. Brandon should have at least been given the opportunity to say, look, I messed up. It's not going to happen again. And look at my record of what I've done in this campaign. It's been effective. But I also want to say that Billy Kirkland is one of the best in the state, and he's also just a super-duper guy, too. And I know Billy's doing a great job and will continue to do a great job.
I think what it showed, Dennis, is that, listen, Donald Trump was scrambling when he became the nominee. And I'm not saying that he picked Brandon because there weren't a lot of people in line. I'm sure my good friend Brian was in that line wanting to, begging to be Georgia's campaign manager for Donald Trump. He just couldn't get to the front of the line with so many people waiting to do this. But I think what it really...
Should we bring back the he's not going to be our
right,
nominee?
Right. Yeah, we should. You should definitely play that. But I think it showed two things. One, the vetting process that it really... that is needed when you're going to put someone out there as the face of your campaign in quite frankly, a battleground state. And then two, I think also, listen, they knew that Brandon had these charges. Something happened to why now, 42, 41 days left before the election, you now say, okay, this gentleman has got to resign. So I think it's more to the story than what the Trump campaign is sharing with us.
One of the legal issues involving this campaign was at least suspended for a while when Secretary of State Brian Kemp suspended the practice that his office had of requiring your ID documents to absolutely match all the way through before you could be put on the voter rolls. We're talking about tens of thousands of voters here who might be restored to the voter rolls, albeit very soon before the election. So, Theron, is this going to have an impact, do you think, on how the election goes in Georgia, or is this simply an effort by all parties to say, let's just get through this and we'll pick it up later on?
You know, Secretary Kemp is a fellow Athenian. I've known him for decades, and he's a good guy. But what I would tell Secretary Kemp, and I know he listens to this show, and I know he listens to other broadcasts, shows that Brian and I do, is that it's a problem with optics. And let's just really crystallize for our listeners. Back in 2014, there were many, many groups who were basically saying, listen, folks are being thrown off the voter rolls. The process is too strenuous. And people were saying, listen, the process of trying to get a free ID was harder than actually trying to register to vote.
The required government-issued photo ID.
Correct, which you got to have because our Republican leadership, our governors, made it harder and harder for folks to basically vote in this state. But the other thing is that there have been three federal lawsuits filed against the Secretary of State's office this year alone. So Well, I think he should be commended for finally saying, okay, it's a problem and we should do something about it. I do think that it increases the amount of distrust that most people in this state, particularly minority groups and Democrats, have in our system to make sure that everyone is given that right and privilege that they have to register to vote and then go out and exercise their vote. I think Democrats will use this to our advantage to not only criticize Secretary Kemp, because overall he's had some stumbles along the way, but he's been a good Secretary of State. But I think Democrats can use this as an opportunity to stress the importance of why we should register, but more importantly, why we should elect more Democrats to make sure that this perception of Republicans, particularly in Georgia, making it almost impossible for those taxpaying citizens, unlike Donald Trump, who pay their taxes and show their tax returns, can go out and register to vote and make sure that the process is fair and that it's efficient.
There's no evidence whatsoever, empirically or otherwise, that any Republican officials running this state have suppressed the vote. We have a turnout of African Americans in this state that is at or above the level of white turnout in this state. That speaks for itself, in my opinion. It completely debunks any idea that there is a concerted effort by Republicans or white people to suppress any minority vote. The system we have in place is fair. The system that we have in place is to ensure ballot security and election integrity. And Brian Kemp should be commended for keeping that at the forefront of his mind. In this case, I think he reached an agreement because right now it is all hands on deck, a month and a half out from a major election, the biggest election that will, one of the two biggest election days of the decade for Brian Kemp. So that's what they've got to be focused on. They can't be focused on frivolous lawsuits from these groups that just simply want to get media attention to their calls to make it look like they're doing something. This is not going to make a difference for Georgia voters, all of whom already have access to the ballot box.
I've said Secretary Kemp is a friend. I think he's an outstanding Georgian. However, this is not the first time a lawsuit has been settled. And this is not the first time that voters raise questions. Now, I mean, let's not forget the data breach that happened a little less than a year ago.
But irrelevant to this topic.
But when you settle, and I will take a line for Donald Trump, when you settle cases, you're basically somewhat admitting that you did something that was not correct. I think we both can agree that keeping tens of thousands of people off the voter rolls who tried to register 2 years ago, who was unable to vote in 2014 when we had a big U.S. Senate race and a big gubernatorial race here. And now that because of the three federal lawsuits, at a time where we have a big election coming up, he agrees to settle the case and to do what was right. This could have been done a long time ago. And I think one of the criticisms around the Secretary of State's office has not necessarily been, are they trying to protect the ballot and protect the integrity of voting? It's been making sure that we can be efficient and get things processed at a timely rate so voters will have the opportunity to register, get the voter registration cards back. But it's not a black or white thing. There are white people, Brian, on that roll that try to register to vote, who try to get a state-issued government ID, who cannot do it because the process of doing so is so difficult and it's so unorganized. And so I'm happy to know that he's going to better his process. I'm happy to know that he is going to allow these folks their fundamental right and privilege to vote in this upcoming election.
Let me tell you, as somebody who just moved to DeKalb and transferred his registration from Fulton to DeKalb, and I still have not gotten my card in the mail from DeKalb, I will speculate, and I don't have any facts to back this up, but I will speculate, and I'm fairly certain I'm right, that Republican counties do a much better job of turning around voter registration cards than Democrat counties do. The DeKalb county system can't even read my water meter right.
Hey, now I got to defend DeKalb, but I will make sure, because in the true meaning and essence of bipartisanship, Brian, I will make a call to this DeKalb County, Democratic ran county, and make sure that you are treated properly. I can't make any promises on live radio, but I can definitely tell you that you will get your voter registration card. You will be able to exercise your right to vote.
Quick yes or no. Do you think this will affect Secretary Kemp, or do you think the Democrats will use this against him in his next race 2 years from now, which may very well be for governor?
Listen, I'll go first, and I'll let Brian defend him. I mean, listen, Brian Kemp, people criticize me because he's one of the few Republicans that I actually passionately talk about. I mean, again, he's from Athens. The work that he was able to do to bridge some of the racial tension in Athens is unparalleled. I mean, Brian Kitt would be the one lone Republican who would go to meetings and really understand what's going on, not only just in the black community, but in the white community. I think he has a promising opportunity to be considered to be the next governor of this state of Georgia. I hope that it's a Democrat, but if it's a Republican, I could probably live with Brian Kemp. But the problem is this. He's had an agency that is so sacred. I mean, it protects the sacred vote. And he's had some stumbles along the way. The one thing that he did differently this time, instead of that he didn't do without a data breach, is that he came out with, I think, a very fair statement saying, listen, you know, we're backed up. These people are working very hard. But do Democrats use this as an opportunity to criticize him if he's a Republican nominee in 2 years from now? Absolutely. I can see the commercials now. I can hear the robocalls. I can open up the mail pieces and tell you how it's going to not only affect Democrats, but it's going to, I think, hurt some of his credibility within the Republican primary voters to make sure that this guy can handle the job of being a governor.
We're going to have a big and diverse and competitive field in our primary in 2018. Brian Kemp's got a strong record to run on. He's also got a great, great personality in addition to having that record. He's very personable. When you talk to him at a political meeting, he knows your name and knows your spouse's name, and it always gives you a warm welcome. I would say the same thing about Casey Cagle, actually. I mean, very good in that small room atmosphere, very personable, he's easy to get along with. Every single candidate is going to have that weak point that will be the opening for an attack. Every single one. You know, Lord knows, in 2010, when I was on Governor Deal's campaign, we knew exactly what they were going to attack us on. It, you know, that's the beauty of it, is if you can prepare for what you know is coming, you can deal with it very early on, get it out of the way, do all the explaining you need to do so that when you get attacked in the campaign, you say, I dealt with this a long time ago. I'm going to talk about the issues that are important to Georgians. That's what Brian Kemp's going to need to do.
Also this week, we saw the filing of a lawsuit against the ballot language for the Opportunity School District proposal from Governor Deal. Some folks call it the school takeover plan. You guys are not the lawyers in the room, but you are the political wise heads in the room. From a political point of view, does this lawsuit make it tougher for the pro campaign for Opportunity School District, or does it really affect it at all?
I don't think it affects it at all, particularly if a judge doesn't act on it before the election. I don't think, I mean, getting the word out about a ballot initiative is hard enough through earned media. So this group trying to get earned media by suing the governor isn't going to penetrate that message to the public. One, the fact they've saw that they have filed a lawsuit doesn't mean that anybody's done anything wrong. It means these people want to make a statement. That's what they're doing. They're making a statement. There's nothing wrong with the ballot language. It accurately reflects what would happen in an opportunity school district scenario. And the speaker, the lieutenant governor, and the governor get together and write this ballot that is in the law. The law is followed. Everything is as it should be.
My colleague Kate Sweeney did a story this week where she went to a park, I think, and showed the amendment to voters, none of whom could make any sense of it. Now, it's hardly the only amendment that has that kind of language in it, let's be fair here. But does that point up a bigger question of ballot language when it comes to amendments and the engineering that some folks suspect goes on no matter who's in power?
The fact of the matter is that Brian is on this show defending the language. And the question on the ballot means that the opposition against OSD is winning. The lawsuit, while he makes a really good legal point, may not actually get to a judge's courtroom and maybe a verdict is reached, but it does raise the question. Because the whole thing around OSD, and if you look at the people who were promoting it, we were saying a couple weeks ago on the show that I was encouraging folks to really read the question, because the way it's currently written is very confusing, and it makes people feel bad about not supporting better education in our state. But
as it should.
But if you really, again, as we've learned from time and time again in the work that Brian and I do, is that you have to always read the fine print. It has created doubts. And I'm not shocked that you can go to a park and give the ballot question and put it in front of someone, and that amplified with this lawsuit saying that it's some questions raised. And then more importantly, Dennis, as we actually sit here and we talk about this issue, the opposition groups are growing and growing and growing. Right now, the opposition is outspending the governor and his team across the state 3-1. If you look at the television ads, if you look at stuff that's going on, particularly around the state, and Brian knows this, there's been a tremendous amount of money spent, and I think that the polls are shifting around OSD.
Darren is right. As of last week, he was right. They were outspending the Opportunity School District effort 3-1. That has changed now. They front-loaded their money and did a big media buy, and now they're kind of scrambling to keep it going. So they're off the air right now, while the pro-Opportunity School District ads are still on. And by the way, being run in pretty heavy rotation, I saw it several times last night. Here's the interesting thing. The opponents talk about all of these issues that don't have to do with children. That is all that they can do. They want to bring up legal issues. They want to sue the governor. They want to talk about local control, which they've never really cared about before.
Local control is all about the children, making sure that we have smaller classrooms, making sure that teachers and local school board members who are teaching these kids feel that they're empowered to do so, that they're not worried about a governor who's going to create a more bureaucratic system to make sure that if they do one thing wrong, that they'll be fired. It's not one thing wrong. These schools have failed three years in a row, and many for longer than that. When you label the school as failing, the impact that it has on the children and the parents and these children to be able to go on with their matriculation to middle school and high school and then hopefully go to college, it's a negative stigma that will live with them for the rest of their life. So I totally disagree with you. It's all about the children.
Yeah, this is not about the school. This is about the children. And we're not so much worried about the stigma. You know, there's a stigma that comes with dropping out of high school. There's a stigma with getting a meaningless degree when you are illiterate and can't do simple math because you don't have the skills you need to compete in a global workforce. And we know that these failing schools are graduating or pushing through or dropping out kids who don't have a chance in our workforce. And what do they do? Where do they go? What Governor Deal is trying to do is get to the heart of what causes poverty and crime in our state because he cares about these kids. And I wish these people who are out there fighting against OSD gave half as much of a concern about the children whose futures are being cut off beyond their control as they did about saving their own jobs.
But Brian knows, like I know, Dennis, that if he's got to come on this show with 40 days left to go to this ballot initiative, it's going to be put to the people of Georgia. Really, October the 17th is going to be the first time when people start early voting. Thank God that's still a right that the Republicans haven't taken away from the people of Georgia. If this lawsuit and the amount of resources that have been spent and the growing groups of parents and teachers groups across the state, it is a nightmare for the Republicans because they thought that folks were not going to be paying close attention to this when it was ushered through the legislature. I mean, you had Democrats. It's one Democrat in particular who they have on a television station. I won't get into Brian, why I know that senator is so proudly up there saying all these good things about this. That's fine. But I'm telling you, the lawsuit coupled with people really questioning the language and how this is going to be bad for our schools, I think is prevailing, and I think Brian is on the defense.
Theron Johnson is former National Southern Regional Director for President Obama's 2012 campaign. He's a Democratic strategist. Brian Robinson is a former Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Nathan Deal, and by the time we get together next, maybe a father.
That's right.
Congratulations.
Anytime now.
You and your wife, all the best.
Yes.
Congratulations, Brian. I think you're going to make an outstanding father. And I do look for the day when I can come over and have a conversation with her about how her dad used to just argue me down about this. He perceived terrible economy that President Obama put forth and that she's paying for all these taxation and all this trillions and trillions of dollars of debt that he claimed the president put us in when President Obama would go down as one of the best presidents in the United States.
And when she's 2 years old, I'm going to take her to Brian Kemp's office to get her registered to vote without an ID, just as you wish.
Thanks to both of you. Talk to you soon.